Yeah, we'll be in touch.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Debrief with Dave O'Neill, and I'm here with Ashley Fils-Aimé. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. Absolutely.
Well, it's good to... I'm giving you a lift home from a gig.
Yes.
Which is what we do on The Debrief. What was a primary school benefit?
It was a Catholic school.
Yeah. So did that worry you, doing a Catholic school, or...?
I thought it was a school. I didn't realize we were Catholic until about maybe 20 minutes before I went up. And I'm like, oh, I wonder how this is going to go down. So... When I first started out, I did some crude jokes, and then I go, can I do that?
Sure.
Let me know that I was aware.
Yeah.
And then you went up there, I'm like, I could have done a lot worse.
I didn't hold back, did I?
No. George goes, I dropped 17 fucks, and look at Dave, and you worry about your set? I'm like, oh, and then you're killing it.
Yeah, well, George Campagnaris, he's a great comedian, and it's his kid's school.
Yeah.
And also, they're just parents, though, just because they send their kids. You're from America originally. If people don't realise, Ashley is a black American comic who now lives in Australia.
Yep.
And because I grew up around here, I know that the Catholic parents are no different from the, you know, normal state school parents. There's no difference, really. Just that they're Catholic.
Yeah, that's the part of that.
They were always the naughtiest boys at school, the Catholics. At Scouts when I was in, they were all the tough kids. So we don't have to worry about that. How long have you been in Australia, Ashley?
I've been in Australia, it's going to go on 3 years.
Three years. Yeah, right. And you came out here with I can't remember his name, the famous comedian.
Pablo Francisco.
Oh, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a big, very big comic with a huge following across the whole world. And I came out here with him as part of his festival tour back in 2010 and then 2012.
And so you were his support act?
I was a support act. And Australia has a rule where you have to have an Australian support act. And so he almost didn't come because he definitely wanted to have me. So we got Anthony Salome to help us
Anthony Salome, yeah, right, yeah.
To get us on the bill, you know. So that's how that worked out. But I was, you know,
how long do you have to do as a support act to someone like him?
In America, you're looking at 20 to 30 minutes. What headliners do here is what support acts do in America. Like over here you do half an hour. That's like a headlining spot, or 45 minutes, that's a headlining spot. In America, that's a support.
So how long do you do as a headliner over there?
About an hour.
Oh, an hour?
Absolutely an hour, yeah. Minimum.
Minimum?
Minimum.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, 45 to an hour, yeah.
And how long did you tour with him for?
I toured them for 11 years.
11 years?
Yeah, straight.
So did he must have started, I mean, he's been doing comedy for a while.
Yeah, he's 10 years my senior, so he's 49, and he's been doing it a lot. Discovered me or found me, he already had a following, and I was just not used to it. It was like from rags to riches, so to speak, in a comical sense.
Yeah,
I was barely doing gigs, and
were you doing like open mics or?
Yeah, but what it was, I was at the comedy club called The Improv, and what I did was my parents didn't want me to do comedy, so they came out of the house, but I had a car. So what I did was I slept in my car, but I worked at the comedy club all day long.
You're like Jewel, sleeping in the car.
I think every comic has slept in the car once or twice in his life. But I got a job there, telemarketing in the daytime, and also I was a food runner at night. I just run food.
Yeah, right.
Which is different from a waiter. And I was there all day long, and I got to see how the business worked, how managers would say, tell them I'm not here. And when they really are there, I'm like, oh, this. So when someone calls you and you ask for a manager, and he says, I'm not here, there's a possibility that he actually is there.
Yeah, right. You're learning the tricks of the business.
Like, oh, my God. This is crazy. And, like, and the trick is, if they put you on hold and then they come back and say he's not here, it's because they just told you.
And so he was one of the first, well, not the first, but he did like a movie, didn't he? Like a stand-up movie.
He did a movie guy voice, but what he was the
so
first.
Like the old Richard Pryor idea of doing a comedy movie.
Yeah, no, he did the movie man voice, like the one man, one desire. So what?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He was the first comic to break out internationally, and they tested him to see if he can go and you know, like do Scandinavia, and he sold I think like somewhere like 60,000 tickets or 6,000 tickets in a matter of like 20 minutes or some crazy number like that.
Yeah.
And so he did a Scandinavian tour, and then after that they started bringing other comics up. So he was the first comic to go international that wasn't really like you know, Eddie Murphy type famous.
Yeah. And he's great, does great voices. I've interviewed him on the radio, just great voices, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Actually, you know what? I think I probably might have been with him.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, we went to all those stations, and we toured for a long, long, long time, and we went to 16 different countries I got to experience, and that's where I got my universal, I guess, appeal but from.
Is it hard going out in front of a crowd that's so psyched to see him, and then you come out, they're like, oh.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I never let that get to me, but I knew that they were there to see him, but I knew that they were going to enjoy my act as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, when they say your name, you know, it's almost like you see them clap with disappointment.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit.
I supported David Strasman, the ventriloquist, for about 3 months. And Strasman, I heard people say, "Oh, who's this?" when you walk out. Who's this?
Yeah, exactly.
I was standing at the front door, and the door person was saying, "And we have the support act on first." And one goes, "I don't want to see the support act. I don't want to see them." It's like, oh, great, great time. So yeah, you got to be good. You got to win them over.
You got to win them over quickly.
Win them quickly. Exactly.
Yeah, you don't have a. I mean, luckily I had the advantage of being in front of a non-African-American audience. And being African-American comic, and when you're in front of a non-African-American audience...
Oh, they love you.
They're afraid to be racist.
Yeah.
They're afraid that they're racist, so they immediately like you. Because they're afraid if they don't like you, then they're racist. And that's the feel you feel, like, oh, let me go ahead and... And then they end up liking you for real.
And have you found that Australians are very... welcoming to you, or?
Oh my gosh, I find Australia to be the most laid back country that I've been to in all the countries that I've been to. The only thing about Australians is don't try to be fully yourself. They don't like
that. That's a very kind of an American.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to figure it out.
Yeah. Like, I'm doing really well. Nah, mate, come on.
Exactly. They don't want to hear that shit. They want you to be real with them.
Australian people, like most people around the world, they love black culture.
So yeah, they do.
The music, the comics, the movies,
entertainment. Yep, they do. So to them, it's like when I'm on there, it's like they're watching television that they can touch.
That guy. Yeah, I can meet him and talk to him. Yeah. So why did you settle in Australia? So you got off the tour.
Yeah, the way I got off the tour, I was touring here. But when I was in Pablo, after 11 years, man, I was getting burnt out. But because we were in a different place every week, sometimes.
Yeah, that's hard. 11 years. Jeez.
It was ridiculous.
Brutal.
We fly from California to do a show one night in Norway and come out the next day. Like, I remember doing stuff like that. I was like, oh my gosh, like all the way. And so anyway, we do that, and I came here, and I was at the Forum, and then there was a girl in the front row. To make a long story short, that I ended up falling in love with immediately.
Oh wow!
And I was
It's
a love story. That's what it is. But Pablo at the time, it would have been difficult for me to
get out of the tour.
So I ended up booking myself at the Comics Lounge
in North Melbourne. Yeah,
yeah, I spoke to Dan, one of the managers there, he ended up giving me a headlining spot there. So I told Pablo, hey, listen, I'm going to go to Australia for about a week or two, and I'll be back. And then I took one suitcase, and it's been 5 years. I never went.
Oh, God. was Pablo upset after losing his support act of 11 years?
Absolutely. He didn't see it coming. But
we got to leave eventually, though.
Yeah, I mean, there are some certain things that I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to mention, but that I had to leave for my sanity.
Yeah,
you know?
of course.
But there's no way I could just say, I'm going to get up and leave, because you can be blackballed and blacklisted. So you have to. I knew I had to do something very big and very different for me to survive. So I left the country, and then I met her, and then, you know, the girl I'm with, unfortunately, her, it's just like, it goes from one extreme to another. So I'm with a girl whose family is totally against me being with her, because we have different cultures. So to the point,
different cultures,
they disowned her, so now we're still getting married in a month's time.
And her family won't be there, or?
No way, they disowned her. They officially don't want anything to do with her.
How core is that in 2017? In Australia, that a family disowns their daughter.
That's what I don't. We're both.
I get it.
We knew there'd be a problem. We didn't know it'd be that serious. But then again, it's like that has. I can't be responsible for people's reactions.
No.
Especially when all I'm doing is loving somebody. That's all I'm doing.
Exactly.
But, you know, pride and all that stuff. You know, your ego is not your amigo, as they say. So my ego has to go.
And was it easy to get citizenship here, or?
No. Oh my gosh, no. When I first got here in 2012, when I was trying to, after being with Pablo, when I was headlining, I went to go try to extend my visa, and then when I went to extend my visa, the guy told me that I looked familiar. But at the time, I was on a tourist visa, and he's like, "Hey, you look familiar." I'm like, "I look familiar." I'm like, "I could be anything, you know, like my uncle's Nintendo, you know, runs Nintendo. It could be that." And he's like, "No, you know what? We're gonna hold on to your application." And at the time, I was signed with Century, had given me a deal, and they were getting
ready to sign. That's a big management company.
Yeah.
So this guy's seen you doing stand up somewhere.
Yeah, the customs agent.
A customs agent had seen you doing stand-up.
He actually called me up and goes, actually, we know who you are. You look familiar. We actually Googled you, and we found out you were not only were you doing this show here and at the Comic Sounds, but you've been here before. So they found out all the times that I've been with Papa.
Oh,
like,
no.
Years before, and like, you have 28 days to leave, or we're going to ban you for 3 years.
Oh, my God.
At the time, I just, you know, I wanted to be with my girl. When I came here, it was like freedom. I've tasted something I've never tasted. Freedom, admiration, people who just respected me just off of being, because I was, you know, I guess it was being African American. It was this whole different world for me. And
I
gotta go. Oh my God.
Yeah, you've just discovered this great world, a great woman, work. It's like, yeah, some guy rings you up. Yeah, I've seen you. You're pretty funny, but you got to get out.
You got to get out.
So what did you do?
Well, I went back to America, and then I went back to Miami, where I'm originally from, and I went to my parents' house. And at the time, Pablo was in Miami too. That was part of the tour, and I just I didn't tell him I was even in town because I didn't want to deal with the whole back on tour. And it was because awkward. I just stopped talking to him stuff for a while. Then I got a lawyer, and the lawyer, to make a long story short, 9 months later, I had to write a letter of apology to the government. I had to write a letter of apology, and it's stating, I will never tell a joke here again.
What?
Under the wrong visa. And
okay.
It just felt very weird.
Yeah.
It was just like, I can't do a joke. When he told me to do that, I'm like, are you serious, man? He's like, yes, they won't ever apologize. I'm like, they won't ever apologize. Then I, you know what? After a while, when the whole Barnaby Joyce thing happened, I'm like, I get it. When Barnaby Joyce and Johnny Depp wanted an apology, they want the government here. They want an apology. When
yeah,
you
right.
Wrong, you know, like
yeah.
You bring a dog in. You want an apology.
And so yeah, and so then, but now are you an Australian citizen yet?
I just got my residency Valentine's Day.
Oh,
so I figured they love me on Valentine's.
Fantastic.
Day.
So you can stay here for as long as you like.
I can stay as long as I like. I don't have to be around my relationship anymore. I can actually break up with her, and I can be on my own. No, that's gonna happen. But
nah,
you know, that's just
sure.
That's one of the things. Like I'm safe here, and I did it well before Donald Trump went into office.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, she was a blessing in many ways. I didn't see that coming either. So. It's definitely a blessing to be here, and I wouldn't go. See, I see a lot of comics there. They want to leave here. They want to go to America, and I'm like, I don't ever want to go back to America.
Right.
I mean, I'll go there next month so she can meet my family, but I don't want nothing to do with America.
What do your family think about your Australian move?
They were shocked, but they weren't too shocked because I told them I was going to do comedy, and then you know about. And then they didn't believe in me. And then, like, you know, like about, I'll say in my 12th year, I got with Pablo and I started touring the whole world. And then all that went to, and then all that went away because 1 week I'll be here. Next week.
But surely once you got the tour with Pablo, they went, oh, he's obviously doing okay.
Yeah, they all let it go. They all.
I bet you they came to some shows.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My mom even flew from California, from Miami to California. That's like flying from Perth
to Melbourne or somewhere. Yeah.
And she has aerophobia. She has a fear of flying. So I knew something going on there.
Did you grow up in a big family or?
Yeah, youngest of five.
Yeah,
my sister's a doctor who has her own clinic, married to a doctor who has two clinics. My other sister's a preacher and she's married to another preacher. And she has her own church and he has his own church. And my other sister is a teacher. My brother.
So sort of high achievers.
Yeah, they're all. Yeah, I'm the. You know, like the whole story goes. I'm the comedian.
Yeah, yeah. What did your mom and dad do for a job?
My dad has his own company. He has his own. It's called a jitney. A jitney is a service in America. Well, like imagine a bus that'll pick you up anywhere and drop you off anywhere versus stops. So if you're on the side of the road and you have your hand up, the jitney will come pick you up, and then he literally waits. Stop right here, and he'll stop right there.
Oh, right.
But it's only in the cities. But he had that, and he has a museum, a Haitian museum that he started. He has a statue.
He started a museum.
Yeah, a Haitian historical museum. Because he's Haitian. My dad's like, he has so much money. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna start a museum. And then he went to Georgia, and he's like, we need credit because they fought in the Civil War.
Oh, Haitians, right? Yeah, sure. Haitians, yeah, right. So are you Haitian?
I'm Haitian American. Yeah,
right.
I speak a few languages.
How many languages?
Three.
Yeah, right.
French, Creole. And English, and I understand Spanish.
Wow, well, good on you for starting a Haitian museum.
Yeah, well, he's a go-getter, man. He's one of those guys. He's always has to do something. We all.
It's a little bit like what different, but similar to being a comedian, I suppose. You got to create stuff.
Absolutely, you just have to take those chances. Like my my father didn't believe in my comedy, and then all of a sudden he came to California with my mom, and then he saw that I knew a couple of famous people, and then he's like, "Oh man, I'm so proud of you." I'm like, "Oh, I never heard him say that before." So.
Oh, man, well, that's good.
So everybody, my whole family is like, they're all my biggest fans, all of them.
Nice.
My brother's like, "Oh, you know, what are you doing now? Where are you at now?" And you know, this and that. And he even told me he admires what I do. It's very, but because back in the day when you're 18 years old, you should be in school, you should be in college, and I was like, "Nope, I'm gonna."
Yeah, right. So you would have been the only child in that family who didn't do college. Were you?
And now I'm the one that didn't graduate either.
Oh, yeah. High school. Right. Oh, so, yeah.
It's like, they were like, what the hell? And they all graduated with honors. And, you know, they all did the...
What's Ashley doing?
What the hell is this problem? But as it stands currently, I'm...
Yeah, you found your niche. You found your world.
When you know something, no one else can tell you any different because you're with yourself 24 hours a day and they only think about you, what? Not that much. You're not in anybody's mind for more than 10 minutes at a time. So they can't. That 10 minutes shouldn't. They can't evaluate your whole 24 hours, 7 days a week that you have by yourself. So when you know something, you can't expect people to understand. And sometimes people with small minds can't understand big concepts. That's a saying that I.
So it's
like,
right.
You know, like that's what we're comedians. We have a different mindset.
That is true. It's true.
We see the bigger picture. And not only that. We're ignorant, so we let the ignorance ride because we don't know what you know the bad part. All we see is the good part. We always see is the part that you know. I had more fun trying to make it than being successful.
Yeah, right. All right. So yeah, now that you're successful, it was more fun trying to do. Interesting.
Yeah, you know when you're with your friends and you all these common friends, you're going to this show, you're going to that show. You have that hunger, and you have that passion, and you have that drive. Then when it becomes a point where you have to you got to do it because you know you got to put food on the table. It's not as fun. You appreciate the power that you have because you can get on stage, but like, I remember having more fun with my first 5 minutes than I do with you know the headline set that I have currently.
And how is the Australian scene different from the American scene in terms of comedy? Do you reckon?
The Australian scene is
smaller.
It's smaller for certain. I find the temperaments between comics who are making it and the comics who are open micers are very different than in America. Like, the comics in America who are up there or making it, they're very cocky, so to speak.
Oh, they're a bit arrogant?
A bit arrogant, yeah. Micers are very, like, you know... But I think it's a bit backwards over here. The guys who are making it, the guys who are, you know, you see all the time, I haven't met one comic who is a professional who wasn't cool.
Yeah, they're all friendly, sort of.
Oh my God, all of them, everyone, they're all friendly. They're all down to earth. You know, from Hughesy to everybody you see, they're all down to earth. Then you run into the open micers here, and it's just like, whoopsie, like that.
Oh, they're a bit. Yeah,
they have a sense of entitlement. I'm like, I don't get that.
That's
like,
interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm like,
they're probably lacking in confidence.
Lacking confidence, but we don't shit on other people.
We
didn't like...
I'm sure some of the American comics that they've been... I remember one of my friends worked with Seinfeld, and he wasn't allowed to talk to him directly. he went to talk to him, and he went, oh, but this guy stepped in and went, well, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I've got to talk to Jerry, I've got to introduce him. He's like, well, you don't just go up to him, you got to come through me.
Yep.
Like, oh, God.
Yep.
It's like a movie set. It's like an American movie set.
Yep. That's exactly how the temperament is. But and aside from that, but in my perspective, as far as like what I'm doing, it's actually really, really well received because it's a different perspective, and they don't know how. Like every time I come out on stage here, they're pretty excited, but they're wondering how am I going to relate to them.
Yeah. Well, you related fine tonight.
Oh, thank you.
At the Catholic primary school benefit. There's no supporting Pablo in a massive theatre, but we're in a reception centre in Burwood. But still, it's an audience, and they bloody loved it. They were great.
They were very nice.
Yeah, parents, they don't get that much, mate. They don't get that much.
It's good that I didn't curse or anything.
You're listening to The Debrief. Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. And Homie. They're a Melbourne-based social enterprise creating pathways out of homelessness. Do you know at the moment there's about 100,000 Australians live without a permanent address? And of those, 20,000 people sleep on the streets or in a makeshift shelter. Why not change this? Come on. Go to www.homie.com.au. Okay, back to the program. We're back on the debrief, Dave O'Neill here, talking to Ashley Filsame.
Filsame. That's close enough.
He's living in Australia now. We're very happy to have him here. He's met a girl. It's all going on. He's doing gigs. And look, I have some debrief questions. Official. Yeah. So what went well tonight and why, you think, actually, in the gig? What do you reckon?
In all our sets?
Yeah.
Well, they were up for it. That's what went well tonight. And went really well when they were up for it. George Capriotis had him going.
He was on fire.
He was on fire. And even when the moment I walked in, he had him going. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a good card. Then I realized, you know, the artist knows him. But then he went before me, did some time, and he killed it.
He's got great energy.
And I was concerned, but my concerns were because it was a Catholic school.
Yeah.
It was religious. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I can't curse, or maybe I can't do this. But George goes, I dropped 17 fucks. I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
He did. And I didn't hold back.
You know, you didn't.
Nah. Well, as I said, I grew up around there, and I know all these guys, they're all just normal people. They're just Catholics. So, because we were Protestants, but we hang out with the Catholics. They're just normal kids, you know. There's no. They're not that religious. They have a few nuns wandering around. Maybe that'd be about it. But what didn't go well and why?
Didn't go well? I did a joke when I started talking about. Marijuana.
Oh yeah. Because they're all very well dressed.
Yes, they were.
They were obviously it's a little bit wealthy area.
Yeah, they had. Because
sometimes I do a lot of those benefits for primary schools, and the people are normally in jeans and t-shirts. There are people like in suits.
Yeah, suits. The women were all dolled up.
Yeah, well dressed, very well dressed. And and were there any organisational hazards that got in the way of the gig? You reckon anything that could have been? Well, what about the dance floor behind us? That was this huge. Because we had a little stage set up, we just go, but there was this massive dance floor behind us.
I feel like we were in a corner.
Yeah, it worked great. For what it was doing, it worked fine.
It was the stage was a bit small. Did the lights get in your eyes?
The lights were a little bit, but I don't mind that.
The lights really, because I'm pretty short, so like it was directly in my. But I think this one of those ones where it had every reason, not every, but it had every room for it to go bad because of certain things.
Yeah.
But it went great. It's like I think had this been like a footy room or a footy night, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, here we go. And then someone's shot out raffle tickets. I've done that before. I've done those before. Where raffle tickets right in the middle of the show, or they'll bring the food out right when you go on stage.
Yeah, the food. Yeah, that's a problem.
I'd much rather them, you know, have their blood sugar levels leveled before I get out there.
And how can we do better next time? Probably can't.
No, that was you killed it, man. You smashed it. I mean, if you think if the only way for you to do better is if their heads would literally explode.
Oh,
because I don't think it'd get any better than that.
I started to lose energy towards the end because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be tired.
Every other line, if not every line, got a big laugh.
Yeah, they were good.
You know, like they were
parents. I reckon, but also I'm in that world because I've got three kids. They've got a couple of kids. So, I'm talking exactly about their own lives. So, anyway.
Well,
I'm annoyed that the good-looking guy in the suit down the front lied and said he was a lawyer.
I thought he was a lawyer.
No, he's unemployed.
He's a liar.
He was the best-looking, well-dressed, unemployed person I have ever seen. And I've been on unemployment benefits. I never looked like that. I know, he was so well-dressed.
Can we say his name?
Dom. Yeah, Dom his name was. Dom and his mate. Jason. Yeah, anyway, Jason looked like a concrete. He was probably a lawyer.
He looked like a bikey.
Yeah, he looked like a bikey.
the bikey who got his tattoo lasered off.
Oh, man.
It's like that guy's missing tattoos.
But generally, though, very well-dressed.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, it's been great having you on my podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
I think you're pretty much the first international act I've had. This is like amazing. We can play a song too now. What sort of music do you like? It's funny because wasn't it funny because the sound guy goes, "Do you want me to play some AC/DC for you, Dave, to walk on to?" I'm like, "Yeah," because you know I'm a bogan, whatever. Yeah, sure, whatever. And I said to you, "Do they play rap for you?" And you're like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
But then it was Bruno Mars, wasn't it?
It was like rap light.
Yeah. Then we were having a discussion. I said, "Is Bruno Mars black?" And you said, "No, you think he's mixed? He's like
black and white. He's a pure blonde of rap."
Yeah, yeah,
like
he's not
light carbs.
Yeah.
And then someone said, he's going to tell your name, Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars.
What sort of stuff do you like?
I like Kiss. I like 80s rock.
You like Kiss?
I do. I'm a big fan. When I was touring with Pablo, he turned me into 80s rockhead.
Did you meet any of Kiss or?
No, we met.
Paul Stanley. Eric Carr. I don't know how I know their names. Gene Simmons, Ace Frehley.
We met the guys who sing Paradise. It must be just like living in Paradise. That's not Kiss though.
That's not Chicago, is it?
No. It's David Lee Roth.
Oh, you met David Lee Roth?
Yeah, we went to his concert. We got to hang out with him.
And what was he like?
Cool man, and he was pretty old, but he was looking pretty cool. Yeah. He came out swinging a
swinging the mic stand.
You know he used to do like judo, or karate, whatever.
Yeah.
It was.
So yeah. I love that David Lee Roth stuff because Sammy Hagar replaced him, didn't he? In his band, Sammy Hagar replaced him.
Wasn't he from other? Was Sammy Hagar the guy who does tequila? His own tequila.
I'm sure Sammy Hagar replaced him in Van Halen.
Yeah.
David Lee Roth is Van Halen. Of course I know David Lee Roth is in Van Halen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not my area of specialty, that sort of rock, but because I grew up with that rock, I know all about it. And David Lee Roth said, because you know he got kicked out of Van Halen under bad circumstances.
Really?
Yeah, he had a fight with the guys. David Lee Roth got kicked out. They got Sammy Hagar in. And David Lee Roth said he was driving in LA once and he pulled up the lights and Sammy Hagar was there. And he just, Sammy Hagar waved him and David Lee Roth just gave him the finger. And he goes, you know what? That guy has to get up every night and sing some of my songs. I never sing any of his songs. But I think he rejoined them.
Last concert I went to was
Eddie Van Halen and everyone?
No, it was David Lee Roth and then there was the father and the son guitarist.
Yeah. I mean... Oh, Ashley, thanks. How can people find you on Twitter or?
Yeah, they can find me on Facebook and Twitter as well. Ashley Filsaime, FILS-AIM as in Michael.
Cool.
And Facebook.